tests. And we all remember we had some issues with going over our shares. So we have some red boxes that we need to change. But that's what this Model A is. That's why it's all white. The shaded blue under North Bay was just for my own modeling purposes. So I'll just start moving right through. A Model B was an attempt to turn the boxes green. And what the product was is in the Chehalis Basin, the freshwater fishery went from same season length, but it was two fish in October, then one fish November and December, and then release chum in November and December to help address that chum issue we had and to reduce some of our impacts on our coho. And again, it's all released Chinook. And then I had to do some movements on the commercial side where we removed the 2 days out of 2C and then removed 1 day out of week 44. And the product of that is this row up here. It turned everything green except for the sharing of the sport catch. And these are impacts, not harvest, because we're not keeping any Chinook. These are the impacts, and proportionally speaking, more of the impacts are occurring out in marine waters. Okay. Technically, not more of them, but we're not meeting the goal of 73%, but we are for all of the other goals for the fresh water. And the lower part of this table shows for the Chehalis side Chinook, these are all impacts, not necessarily harvest. There's a few of hatchery fish harvest in the non-treaty commercial, but the rest is just, those are impacts. Hump tulips, those are the harvest numbers, and it goes on down the line. This is so you can see the difference between the models and the actual harvest or impacts. So kind of a compare and contrast. So we got another recommendation of fish short somewhere. This will save you a fish or two, but it's not a big savings. And I think I did one more. We did have the request to look at 2B for the commercial sector. So what I did was took model two, the model B, which is the one that put together that turned all the boxes green, and then adjusted the days from 2A, 2D to 2B to see where we end up with. The one thing that caught my eye was, even though it's the same number of days as 2A, 2D, it increased impact on hump tulips Chinook and put us two fish over on our share. But you'll also notice that catch is considerably lower and the X vessel value dropped by 20% by switching it out. And because we're so tight on some of the stocks like hump tulip Chinook, we couldn't pair 2B with any other opening in 2A, 2D to produce a meaningful fishery. So that's kind of where I stopped with the 2B modeling. Again, not having a Quinault schedule makes it very difficult, but as Chad said, we are modeling to meet our objectives and our share, our portion of the share. So with that, those are the four models that I put together to present as kind of starting points. And so I will throw it back to Chad to see if we have any comments or discussions.
Okay, thanks for that, Mike. And I believe, folks, I know we ran through a whole lot of information there, and there's a lot on your screen, and this is an ideal in terms of being able to share this kind of information, but Mike has a model ready to go. So we also can do a little bit of modeling here on the fly, or pull one of these options up to look at the model itself. So I'll just kind of remind folks a little bit of what we were looking for in terms of places where we needed some savings. We needed to, in relation to our 2019 fishery package, which was the base model A that we started with.
Fish, dang it.
Public meeting. We needed to find about 84 hump tulip Chinook. So we needed to find savings of some hump tulip Chinook on that side. We were already under hump tulips coho, as we normally were, but the 2019 package kept us under our management objective of a equal to or less than 5% impact on hump tulips coho. For Chehalis Chinook, all the modeled options keep us on our share, and we're looking okay there. But we did need to find a little bit of savings for Chehalis coho. So that's where we are. For just a quick reminder of the management objectives and where we needed to look to shape some fisheries. So with that, I think we can you can exit out of this, Mike, I think, and we'll turn it over to the advisors. And like I said, if there's modeled options you want us to throw up on the screen, we are prepared to do that. So,
hey, this is Francis. I just want to make an observation on the opening up 2B, instinctively, I would think that would raise our impacts on hump tulips origin coho, since that is the rationale for keeping 2B off limits to the wreck fishery as well. But that didn't happen.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say that, Francis. I think if you look over here in the column where Mike's just about got his cursor,
yep.
it's a little higher, but it's not quite as high as what you would expect.
So, okay, I see. I'm sorry. I was looking at 370. That was last year's season. I should be comparing B to E. So it did go up a little bit, which is what you would expect.
Yeah, it's 82 versus 93.
Okay. That resolves my issue. So, if no one else is going to speak, is there a problem fishing week 43 for the commercials in two areas? I mean, Mike said something about overlapping. Is that a problem for you guys to fish that way? Speaking to the commercial advisors.
Okay.
This is Alan. The thing is, most of the people will be on the Chehalis side and probably hardly anybody on the hump tulip side because there's not enough fish available.
The one thing I would add, and I think Alan stated it pretty well, you might see reduced effort on the 2C side if the areas are open concurrently. It would, depending obviously on whatever days the Quinault has scheduled in that week too, separating those days could definitely put us in peril just in terms of the 4-3, right? So depending on how many days the week the Quinault had scheduled for their fishery would be prohibitive of us being able to fish non-concurrently in all those areas.
Mike, can you slide over to the chum section there? Recreational. Oh, I thought we had it. The So on the rec side, we're going chum non-retention in November and December.
Yeah, that's model B.
Could we're already, and that gets us our savings that we need for chum,
along with some adjustments on the
commercial side.
Commercial side.
So any other advisors have any input or anything they'd like to questions, support for these models, not support for some of these models, something different they'd like to look at?
Well, yeah, I requested before looking at area 2B, and I don't see anything there that reflects that.
That would be model B.
Mike, can you walk through the schedule for 2B again real quick, Bob?
Yep. So what I did was take my model B, which was this one up here. It's the one I had to use to adjust to get all the things green. So we reduced the Chehalis freshwater bag limit in November and December down to one fish, releasing chum in November and December, and then reducing the commercial side by removing one day in week 44 out of 2A, 2D, and then took both days out of 2C. So with that base, I then took those 7 days that we had scheduled for 2A, 2B, or 2A, 2D, and then plugged them into 2B to see where that would get us. And so model E is that 2B commercial fishery with 7 days, 4 in week 43 and 4 in week 44. And that is where we hit an issue. It put the fishing package, the WDFW fishing package, over on our Chinook share in the Hump Tulips. But everything else stayed green. But it also reduced the ex-vessel value by 20%. So fewer fish being caught than having a fishery in 2A, 2D. So you can compare it that there. And here.
So, and folks, we realize that, you know, depending on the proposal we get from Quinn, you know, we may not be able to fish 4 days or 3 days in any of those statistical weeks. We'll have to be a little bit flexible on that. But, you know, in terms of modeling comparisons and seeing what gets us, what gets us the savings that we need to stay on our share and meet our management objectives. We just thought we'd start with the 2019 season and shape that way until we do get a proposal and get a better look at what may be available to us from a commercial fishery standpoint.
This is Alan. What would happen if we fished one day in week 42 if it's not available in one of the other 2 weeks?
We can definitely take a look at that, Alan. Do you know what base model you'd like to start from? Maybe from B?
Just the 2A, 2A, 2D area.
Yeah.
Just to see what happens up there.
Yeah, we can absolutely do that. Mike, you have 2B ready that you could pull up and make that change? We could walk through that.
Got to be off mute before I can do anything. So here it is. I'm putting one day in.
Oh, you got to unshare the screen, Mike.
What was that?
You got to unshare the screen and then share the model screen.
Ow! Hey, I'm doing all the work, man. Don't you see that?
Pulling lots of double duty.
How's that?
There we go.
Okay. So what I did was put a one there. It gave you, well, let me go back so you can all see what was there before. So that's model B. We've got a green box there, a green box there, and a green box here. Can you all see those green boxes?
Yep, we can see them, Mike.
Those represent how much of our share, our harvestable surplus, is available. Put a one there. We're okay on Chinook. We're barely okay on Coho. And we're okay on Chinook, or on Chum. And we remain good down there. So that is an opportunity.
What's the red one there? Says 0.175.
So that is if we are in the 5% restriction. That's designed to tell me that once we get down below there. So it's not needed this year because we're not in any kind of restriction on Chehalis, Chinook, or Coho. So that's basically saying that our impacts are 17%. Of, and that includes the Chehalis tribe, 17% of the cross the bar forecast. And it hasn't been said yet, but because the final ocean package has not been decided upon yet, the forecast across the bar still isn't fully determined yet. This number here could go up or down depending on which package is selected. So if we start to fine-tune this down into the nearest dollar, so to speak, and a different ocean package is accepted, this might turn green or red depending on the situation.
And Mike, can you just confirm for everybody that the terminal run size there, the projected estimate that you're using, is the middle ocean option?
Middle ocean option, yes. So if you're all familiar with the FRAM model, it's FRAM run 2019A. So I think what Alan is showing us is that we do have some opportunity if we lose another day in week 42 or 43, no wait, 43 and 44, if the Quinault schedule puts a few days in those weeks.
Does the cat really have everybody's tongue, or are some people on mute trying to talk and not being heard?
I agree, Francis. It seems quite quiet.
Yeah, I think
I'm just waiting for the right opportunity. This is Kerry.
Thanks, Kerry.
Could you scroll up to the rec season?
The rec seasons. I'm trying to think exactly where. Oh, I see what you mean. Next. Right. Can you see that well enough?
That for everybody, Mike? What the rec season in this model?
Down a little bit.
So I did not change hump tulips. And the Chehalis, I'll go up to the Chehalis right now. there's your Jack fishery. And then that lower section to South Elma opens September 16th with two fish bag release Chinook. And then the November through December, one fish bag release Chinook and Chum. And then above South Elma, and I know it says Porter, but it should be South Elma. Just now saw that, so something else I got to correct. And for the rest of the systems, except for Skookumchuck and Newaukum. Oops. Skookumchuck and Newaukum are our October 6th openers. But October 1st through just the month of October, two fish bag release Chinook, just like it was last year. Then November, we switch to a one fish bag release Chinook and Chum and go through the month of December. So I keep forgetting that these are kind of interconnected, and I did up a bunch of copy paste, and so this Skookumchuck and Newaukum should say October 16th, and not October 1st.
So when you say two fish bags, is that hatchery only?
Nope. It's just like it says. Two fish bag, release Chinook.
And that's Skookumchuck and Newaukum.
That's all of them.
Until November.
Until November 1st, then it's one fish bag. Either wild, it basically a one fish bag for coho, either wild or hatchery.
Okay. What kind of savings would we get if it was a one fish bag, non-selective, that entire duration for the bay and in river?
I did run that model. It was surprisingly less than I thought it would be, but it will gain us about 800 more fish savings.
Yeah.
In fact, we
Mike, I didn't understand your answer. Did it that model work with keep within the management guidelines, or did it not work?
So this model does work, but it provides us a little more cushion if we go to just a one fish limit throughout the whole season. I did not model that for the marine water East Bay yet. So there'll be a few more savings there, but so it would provide probably close to 1,000 fish cushion on the wild coho.
And what did it do to the split between the other management objective that is currently not being met, is the split between freshwater and marine sport?
Chinook.
Yeah, it would probably, I'd have to reduce screen. Hang on. I can do this.
While you do that, Mike, I'm just going to do a quick tech check, if that's all right.
Oh, sure.
I just want to double check. There's a couple of folks who haven't come off mute at all yet, and I want to see if they're able to. So if there's folks that haven't talked, so James, are you able to get off mute? Bob, I think you were able to, Bob. But Andy, have you been able to get it, you know, screen share and muting and unmuting figured out? If folks could unmute and just give me a quick verbal yes.
I can come off mute.
Okay, great.
Can you hear me? This is Bob.
Yep, Bob, you're good.
I'll back to mute.
Thanks, Bob. How about Andy and James?
Yeah, can you hear me there?
Yep, you're good, James. And then Andy?
Andy kept saying and typed in there that he couldn't get anything on the screen, so he made it up.
We've been helping him in the back via email and a couple things. Andy, I'm going to try to unmute you from our dashboard really quick just to see if we can get you to be able to talk.
And Andy, you might be muted locally as well, so make sure to unmute your phone as well.
All right, Chad and Mike, I think we're okay. I think Andy's the one that we're still trying to get troubleshooting done for, so we'll keep working with him while you guys keep talking. Sorry, thank you guys for your patience. I appreciate it.
No problem. So back to Mara's question about if we go to a one fish bag everywhere, does it help the red square in the recreational sharing of impacts, marine versus freshwater? And certainly because most of the impacts occur in marine waters, again, not most of them, 63% or 62% are still occurring in freshwater. The goal is 73%. It will help that a little bit, but I don't think it would bring that one up to the 73%. But at the same time, the coho number will probably go down on the freshwater, and it might drop the freshwater impacts below 73%.
It'll do just the opposite, actually. If you take the marine bag down, we'll catch less coho, and the disparity on the coho will go even further toward the freshwater. This is one of the things we've talked about the policy itself. Is, you know, it's almost impossible to get these percentages to fall in line without looking back and seeing how this has performed over the past few years, and do it at a policy level, and maybe advise the commissioners about the wisdom of those percentages that were chosen, because pretty much they're mission impossible. If you try to tweak one, you're gonna have the effect of sending the other one the opposite direction. So just an observation.
Yeah, this is Bob.
Well,
yeah, if I'm on this comment, I'd like to know how you can generate any fisheries when I'm looking at everything on the Chehalis side is all red. How can you generate any recreational fisheries on that? Doesn't make any sense to me.
Bob, I think what the issue here is it's not red because we're under escaped or we're over a harvest control rule. It's red because it's just not meeting the sharing requirements or the sharing guidance, I guess I should say, that's in the policy between the sport fishery in the marine area and in the freshwater. That's why it's red. It doesn't take us under escapement objectives or anything else. All of these, the green to the left or right shows you whether you're meeting the management objectives. These are just about the sharing principles in the policy within the sport allocation.
With that being said, Chad, what's going to happen when the tribes turn around and put their fishery in there? Because we're really running around here shooting blind. We don't have a clue what the hell our fisheries are going to be. And you know they're going to be fishing in the prime areas in prime time. So we're kind of wasting our time shooting in the
prime areas. I hear you, Bob. It's going to be difficult, but it is difficult for the commercial schedule, the rec schedule. And as I said at the beginning of the meeting, we're anticipating that the Quinault Indian Nation is going to provide us with a fishery proposal that stays on their chair. So we can do as much planning as we can to utilize the impacts and stay within the conservation and management objectives that we have on our shares. Really what this affects is how we do a commercial fishery. And we can take a look at that. I realize that makes that difficult given the provisions that we have, the guidance that we have in the Grays Harbor salmon management policy. You know, we'd like to be farther along, but the facts are that we are not. As I mentioned at the beginning of the meeting, once we get that proposal, we're going to get back to you folks and have another meeting to discuss this. But right now, we've got what we've got. So let's just continue forging ahead and see where we end up. And we'll go from there.
This is Dave. Am I unmuted?
Yep, we hear you.
Okay. On the percentage of sharings with the policy, what has happened in the past is because it's both rec, if the freshwater don't use its share, the bay's been allowed to use its share, If the bay don't use its share, the fresh water could, as long as neither one infringes upon the other's share. In other words, the bay and the fresh water have a share and it's split by percentage, but if one can't use it, the other can, as long as it doesn't steal fish from one or the other. That's how it's worked in the past. Okay. Second, to the question about a one bag limit, does the rec proposal turn the boxes red on the rec season?
Depending on which model you run, but like I said, model B had two fish in September and then one fish November through December with some reduced commercial numbers, and that turned all the boxes green except for the sharing, which, as you pointed out, and it's exactly how it should be said, that the fresh or the marine water wreck fishing has a little bit more impact on Chinook. One could look at it and say that they should get 27% of the coho harvest. They're not
my point exactly.
That could be read right here, but it's not. I had some formatting issues, so I just left it white. But back to Dave's question, using this model, we didn't have to go to a full season one fish bag at this point in time. We still meet our management objectives. Going with one or two fish October, one fish November, December.
Yeah. Did you give consideration to the one fish bag limit I suggested on the Wainuchi strictly for a conservation bit, since we had enough fish to run the full seasons everywhere else?
I had forgotten to run that, but I can do that. It in the modeling exercise, it wouldn't change any of the boxes any other color.
Oh, I wasn't worried about that as overall for the river. It was the basin, this model. It was more about the Wainuchi River as an individual stream in itself.
So, Dave, why don't you share that so everyone can hear your rationale for why it's good for conservation? Thank you.
Well, the Wainuchi is a singular river. It's not like the Satsup where it has three major tributaries and this and that. Most of the spawning is mainstream with a few tribs. The fish that hits the trap get thrown some in between the dam, but a vast bunch of them over the dam. The prodigy from those fish just don't make it back out if they do find a place to spawn up above. So in the Wainuchi mitigation that Mr. Phillips and the agency put forward, the reason for doing their plan was they wanted to restore the Wainuchi coho. That's why they're unmarked, so they wouldn't be harvested. So I make the assumption, because they presented it as an objective of Region 6 and the agency, that conservation would be a priority there. Now, what did I miss?
You didn't miss a thing. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks for that, Dave. We'll definitely take that down as a suggestion and make sure that's noted.
This is Alan. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can, Alan.
Scroll back up to the sport seasons. You have two different things on Johns River and Elk River there. You have two different proposals. One says October 1st to something rather. Yeah, October 1st to November 30, and then October 1 to November 31, and then two different bag limits on the right.
Okay, this is another one where we don't have these over here in this section, so that's my fault. This actually should have been referenced there, and in cut and pasting is the way it should be. So, I mean, John's and Elk should match everywhere else. Does that help right there?
Okay, that's got her then. It's the way it should be.
Yep.
So what you're saying here off the REC proposal, I mean, this particular proposal right here, which is what we commonly regard as a full REC season, okay, it does not violate the policy guidelines or drive us above our share, correct?
Correct.
With the possibility of the coho piece maybe changing, I think we should still throw that caveat in there.
Could you repeat that?
Yeah, I got that one, Mike.
I didn't hear the first part.
The PNC 2 meeting begins on Sunday. And as we work through that week, we hope to leave on Thursday with the final ocean season and a FRAM model run that gives us our terminal run size that we'll use to move forward with. What we're trying to do here in terms of utilizing the middle option is trying to be conservative and with the hope that we're not going to have to make further cuts with ocean seasons coming in. We kind of feel like the middle option is a good place to be, and that's likely to be where things kind of end up. We'll see how that progresses during the week, and I'll definitely be communicating with you folks as we move through the week if things change substantially from that. So I'll communicate with you folks as much as possible as we move through PFMC week and communicate issues as we see them arise.
Hey, Chad, this is Bob.
Yeah, Bob.
I take it you are representing us on us coastal people at PFMC, correct?
No, that is not correct. My current supervisor, Kyle Addix, is the agency representative for the Pacific Fisheries Marine Council.
So I'd like to make a suggestion, and that would be in the ocean fishery. It would be one fish and done, whether it's marked or unmarked, whether it's a Chinook or a coho, period. And maybe we can get some data to find out what the difference is between the marked and unmarked fish in the ocean, because we don't have that data. You guys keep ignoring it every year, and I don't think it benefits us to keep shooting in the dark.
This is Kerry. I recall asking you, Mike, when NOAA had the trawl data, did you ever get the breakdown of the ratio of hatchery to wild for their catch? So when you're making these seasons of marked selections in the ocean, do you know what the ratio is? Because if we're encountering that many wild fish.
I just received, I had a conversation with James Losey today, and there are, so yes, they do record hatchery wild when they're encountering the juvenile coho and Chinook, but there are a lot of caveats and biases in those data. But I would love to continue this conversation with you. Maybe tomorrow I can give you a call.
Yeah, I'd like that. No, it comes back to, just having to give up on our end. I mean, I worry about having an October 1st to 31st fishery with most of the Chehalis tribs and the main stem, just because the amount of pressure that is going to show up there. You have 31-day season with a 2-fish limit, and then it goes down to 1-fish limit. Last season, once everything was reduced to a 1-fish limit, the pressure just dropped off. The gold rush fishery that we create when we have these limited seasons with the two fish limit draws a lot more people from different areas, and just want to be aware of that. And you know, I make my living on the water, but one fish limit, to be conservative, saving 800 fish, that seems fairly significant to me, considering how they can replace themselves. And I would be open to a one adult bag, especially non-selective, if we can't get anything going but the ocean.
Thanks for that, Kerry. And I would just remind folks at this point, we'll definitely take down your suggestions, and this meeting is being recorded, and we're taking notes on it. But I would remind folks of the WPFW website links that have been sent out, specifically public input. You can go to that ocean section on that webpage and provide your comments directly to the folks who work on ocean fisheries. As I said, we'll definitely take down your comments and are happy to have them this evening. But just remind folks that you can use that to comment directly on ocean fisheries through our website. Just to
yeah. I know. Thanks, Chad. I just say it so I don't forget.
Yeah. Kerry and Chad, I might just say one thing. This is James Losey. Kerry, I'm listening to what you're saying. It's making a lot of sense and taking notes here. And you mentioned, you know, sort of, for conservation purposes, you know, this proposal to shift to a one fish bag limit sort of throughout the season. But then at the end there, you said, especially if it's non-selective. And I'd just be interested in just like a little bit more information about that piece there.
Only because if it's a one fish limit and it's a hatchery only, there's going to be times where we have to handle six wild fish to get that one hatchery fish. If we know what the ratio is returning, if it's a 2-to-1 or 3-to-1, that's doable, but oftentimes it's not. If I have to handle 12 wild coho to retain one hatchery fish, mark selective doesn't really work, and it gets people off the water faster. And that's kind of inherently what I feel is kind of important with this. Is to have people get their fish and move on so they don't continue to have an impact.
Hey, this is I just want to make sure I'm capturing.
Can I just respond to Kerry there real quick, just so I can understand those pieces? Kerry, I just was trying to understand whether it was sort of a philosophical issue with marked selective fisheries, or a kind of math problem like you explained. And it sounds like you got a pretty good understanding of it and the math problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. No, that's totally it. I want to mitigate our impacts on the constraining stocks and, you know, have ability to interact with the hatchery fish if it's really at the right ratio. But if we don't know what that is, it's kind of tough.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for that. Appreciate it. And sorry to interrupt you there, Francis.
Okay, so I was just going to say, but we're already at a two fish bag, non-select, and even when it goes one fish, it's non-select. So we've got the wild buffer, at least based on what we think is coming over the bar, that it's there. I mean, this going to one fish just adds an extra bit of conservation. It would still be non-select if I'm hearing Kerry's proposal correctly. Anyway.
You are.
And it would save potentially 800 wild fish, which might be something that we need if TFMC in their infinite wisdom decides they want to go higher than option two, maybe not a full-blown option three. I don't think they have the discipline to use option one, which is don't fish. That's blowing smoke up a really dark hole. But anyway, I would like to address Bob's concern about the ocean fishery, perhaps somewhere between zero and option two is the more appropriate place to be. And I believe a group did go forward at the first PFMC to propose a one fish bag, any Chinook, any coho, clipped or unclipped, one and done. And I think we have an advisor here that might be able to shed some light on what the folks at PFMC thought about that.
Are you referring to me?
I didn't want to throw you under the bus by name, Kerry. Jared, I think it'd be valuable because I think, you know, realistically, that's an option, but the season is so short. Well, you go ahead.
It's presented, and I've never really heard much follow-up from it. I would hope that chatter. Maybe Mike would have heard something from that, but it was the idea of the ocean impacts, just, you know, some days and encountering 12 wild coho to get one hatchery fish. And the mindset is we need more fish to make it back. We need more fish to be making it back to the gravel. And with the encounter rate being so significant compared to the harvest rate, it was presented in that way. I know I've talked with James about it. I had talked with Larry Phillips about it. I had mentioned it to Mike, and we had had conversation with Wendy Beagley about it. So it's still in process.
This is Dave. I'd like to interject here. First, simple point is the policy dictates what the sharing will be, and we should adhere strictly to the policy. If conservation is required, the policy dictates how it's done. As far as extra fish to the gravel, that don't happen. Francis, remember the day you said, we'll let them chum go to the gravel.
I hear you.
And Alan said, we'll take them, and Ron gave them to Alan. Okay, so we have an escapement goal. Seasons are modeled to that escapement goal. The policy dictates the sharing, and we should adhere to both strictly. Mike, could you please go to the total exploitation tab of the model so people can see where the fish go in the ocean before they get here?
Sorry, Dave.
Scroll her down a little.
So these are coho based on the middle model run. Southern SUS is Southern US. Southern US non-treaty excluding. So if you run through the model, here's what you expect across the bar. Here's your objective. Canada, and these are the wild fish. Alaska, south of Falcon is Oregon, basically, or they're Oregon, Northern California. In this proposal, here's your treaty troll. Here is your non-treaty troll, so commercial fisheries. Dip-ins are fish that are caught in the rivers that do not... That are not in Grays Harbor. So you got Ho River, Queets, Quinault, Willapa Bay. So fish caught in those areas, are they treaty, non-treaty? See, non-treaty, that's almost all Willapa Bay. Then you got your ocean impacts, areas 1, 2, 3, and 4, and some in Buoy 10. Then impacts of fish that actually go into Puget Sound. And then your in-river fisheries. So if you look at what has been proposed right now, this is your hatchery, this is your wild, this is combined. This is the basically saying that 48% of the harvest is going to non-treaty. So I don't know if that helps out at all.
Scroll down. So could you scroll down so people could see the Chinook?
Chinook. Oh, here's Chinook. Same kind of principle. Great. Then this is Grays Harbor. Yeah, combined. Before they even get to southern U.S., you got 8,000 going away. Well, it's not southern U.S., but it's below Canada, basically.
And I get that. And the reason I suggest being conservative is they spawn here. This is where we have our control. We can't always control what's going on up there. I know what the policy states, but the fact of the matter is a lot of the forecasting tools are accurate to a point. But when we have such wide ranges, you know, especially the last year, coming pretty far under what was forecasted, it'd be easier to kind of give us a little larger buffer. I think a conservation buffer in mind is not a bad thing. I think that's the mindset that we should kind of adopt given the warmer water regimes that we've kind of seen and the varied ocean conditions. That's just my mindset.
Hey, this is Bob.
I want to do this for the next 10 years.
This is Norm.
And longer.
This is Norm. You know, I understand about the conservation and we need fish on the gravel. But my question in this on this suggestion is, how are you going to enforce it? You know, you're going to have guys like me coming out of the Seattle, Tacoma area, out of Western Washington, Eastern Washington, maybe more into the country. That's if we're out of this shutdown by then, or we don't have another one by then. But how are you going to enforce it? You get someone like myself in the boat, you put me on the river, in the first 10 minutes, I catch a hatchery fish, and I tell you to release it because I want to spend a day on the river fishing, maybe pulling up on the bank, having a quality day. How are you going to enforce it across the entire guide fleet? How are you going to enforce it across all the private drift boats that are floating these rivers?
Well, thanks for that, Norm. I think, you know, we do our enforcement folks do a great job.
No, it's not I'm saying that they're not doing a great job. What I'm trying to say is what happens when, if I've got my own boat, I have a good day as far as the bite's on, and I just fish. I see the bite's on. I fish. I catch and release 20 fish before I take my hatchery fish, or I take my non-clip fish. What's going to prevent me from doing that?
Oh, I see what you mean, Norm. That definitely presents a challenge, and one I don't think the resolution in our data really gives us a really good answer to. We could look at that. And think about when we had higher bag limits and those encounter rates, and maybe try and, you know, model some sort of additional impact than just a straight one fish bag would accrue, so to speak. But, you know, I can't sit here and say how precise that's going to be in terms of the actual impact, really.
Actually, I'm asking a rhetorical question here. How many guys are going to tell their clients, you've got your fish, you're done, and they're 10 minutes into the trip?
Oh, that's a valid point, Norm. Thank you.
Chad, this is Bob. Yeah. I got a question. What about the suit that Wild Fish Conservancy is talking about filing for southeastern Alaska and Canada? That could progress right down to the coast of Washington, too. Has anybody got any updates on that?
No, I don't have any updates on that at the moment. other than their intent to, you know, we talked a little bit about southern resident killer whales at the beginning of the meeting, or not this meeting, but I mean at the beginning of our North of Falcon process out here, that, you know, we have received some guidance from the work group, and PFMC will be considering those guidance. We've got, you know, kind of management objectives from NOAA in terms of how they're going to look at that and assess it. But I still think there's a lot of work to be done there. And, you know, long story short is we'll be, they'll be assessing the entirety of the fishing package and their effect on recovery of southern resident killer whales. So it's definitely a consideration as we move forward. In terms of the specific lawsuit, I don't have any additional information other than that. So
thank you.
Try and chase that down. Thanks, Bob.
This is Dave. I remember way back a few years, and I'm going back, and I can't remember how far, get too damn old, but the one-and-done thing was brought up, and basically enforcement's position on was it's simply unenforceable. If people go out there, like Norm said, drive 2 hours, or even if they only drive half an hour to the river, launch a boat, do whatever, and they got the time and the money invested in, they go out and they immediately haul in a 4-pound dink, they ain't going to keep it. They're going to pitch it overboard. Just like the same, if you have catch and release only works well when the hatchery fish outnumber the wild fish. So if you have a 3-to-1 hatchery fish, your encounter ratio's down, it works just fine. For the Chehalis Basin, where the hatchery reductions have cost us anywhere from 100 to 120,000 adults, it no longer works. When you start going out and catch and release wild fish, you end up, keep a hatchery fish, like two people say, you're just going to wade through the wild fish to try to get one hatchery fish. If you try to tell people you got to take the first fish you catch, they ain't going to do that. This is a double-edged sword, a zero-sum game. It don't work that well, okay? We don't have the need this year to move toward that. If PFMC was to come back and really blow the numbers up, you might have to consider a one-fish bag, okay? But otherwise, you stay within the policy guidelines and you meet your escapement goals. As far as crowding, I don't want to sound harsh toward a guide, but if you're a local person and you're dealing with the guides, the word crowding comes to mind way before you did. And it's things that we all live with. I don't care for the crowding. Nobody cares for the crowding, but with the opportunities available to sport fishermen in this state, it is a fact of life. Get over it. It ain't going away. And the only thing we got to work with to do it is continue to maintain a database and update it so we can do the pressure. Also, in this basin and the policy, we have 3.5, which is protected the Chinook from the massive harvest on the ocean, so the Quenelles take more. But if we fish two, we'd all just squirrel it up. And we have the 4.3 provision, which is like equal opportunity to harvest between inland and the marine fisheries based at Aberdeen, Hokium. And it's also acted as a safety buffer for the wild populations on years when the runs go down and they come in under escapement. So the idea that we give up model seasons and policy-driven seasons for conservation, the conservation has already been written into the policy, and we harvest to the escapement goal. If we want to change that, agencies sit down and negotiate with the tribes, and I'm more than happy to see a permanent buffer put in of 30%, or exploitation rate, which just stays steady straight across the board, good years, bad years, whatever the co-managers agree to. But it's wasted energy to sit here and talk about conservation with the system set up as it is, agreed to by the co-managers. And we have a policy that protects the fish and protects the users. and that's as simple as that. Abide by both.
Thank you for that, Dave. So we've had a lot of discussion here, and we're getting going on a little bit. I've been with a couple of the folks who haven't talked much this evening. Maybe Mara or Norm. Do you have anything you want to add here?
No, I said what I wanted to say.
Thank you, Norm. Mara?
Yeah, thanks, Chad. You know, it's been actually a really good discussion, and I'm sort of hearing a number of different viewpoints. Personally, the one and done for me works great, but it's a mindset. And I think Carrie said that it's a mindset of how to do how you fish. And I'm sort of hearing and getting it's like it only works if there's a shared mindset. It only works if there's a sort of agreement that other groups aren't going to pick up the fish. And I get that. I guess, you know, when I put it all together, I'm not necessarily seeing the need this year to go down to that one bag limit. But I just wanted to sort of, the only way that, I mean, I guess that those are my two thoughts there.
Awesome. Thank you for that, Mara. And let's see, looking at the list here. Alan, we haven't heard much from you tonight. Do you have anything you want to add, bud? You're still on mute, Alan.
Yeah, I'm here. I had to get to it. Yeah, I'm here. I got to get the mic on here. What happens if this coronavirus goes all the way through part of the summer or longer and there's no fishing open? What's going to happen then? Even if it goes in the fall, the governor says the commercials can fish, but not the recs. What's the state going to do?
Well, those are good questions and something everybody's you know worried about. We're planning right now to be able to fish our schedule in the fall. Our hope is that we'll get through this period and we'll get through it over the next few weeks. And then as we move into the summer, if the situation changes and dictates changes, then I can easily commit to coming back to you guys and having that discussion at that time. I'm sorry that's not the greatest answer, but I just don't have a crystal ball on this one, and I don't know where we're going to go if that were to happen. I know right now that you know commercial fisheries have been deemed essential, and recreational fisheries have been shut down. But if things were to progress to that point, all the way into August, October, November, I'm not sure what that would look like at that point in time, Alan. And to be quite honest, I hope to God that that's not what we're talking about. But with that being said, you know, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. But for now, we're planning to move forward with fall fisheries and hopeful that we're well past this, you know, troubling point in our history. And we can all get back out on the water and do what we love. So appreciate the question. Thank you.
Yeah, that was from my brother Jack. He just come in here a little bit ago, and he wanted me to ask you that.
All right, well, thank you, Jack. Okay, we got about another 15, 20 minutes here, and then we'll turn it over to public comment. So those of you who are in attendance from the general public, if you could go ahead, if you'd like to speak, hit your raise hand feature so we can get an idea of how many folks would like to speak. And then I want to be cognizant of everybody's time, and we always try to shoot for, you know, starting on time and ending on time with these meetings. So if you could go ahead and use the raise the hand feature, we can get kind of an idea of who would like to speak, and I'll just go back to open advisor discussion here for the next few minutes. So thank you, everybody.
And this is Dana. Just a reminder for participants, for attendees, to raise your hand. You should actually have the raise hand icon at the bottom of your screen on the black dashboard area. So you should press on that icon to indicate that you want to raise to provide public comment, and we will unmute your line to be able to speak.
So do we have any advisors who would like to add any final thoughts here before we get to the public portion? Okay, not really seeing anybody rushing to the mic there. So yeah, go ahead, Dana.
Thanks, Chad. I'm not seeing any hands raised at this point, but again, the raise hand icon should be found on the black dashboard area. Click on that and we will unmute your line. And if you don't see the black dashboard area, just hover over just at the bottom of your application, and you should be able to see all the Zoom features there.
For anyone that's on the phone, can you, Dana, would you give them the instruction on which star option to use if they want to raise their hand from their phone? Thank you.
Yeah, so if you are on your phone, you should press star 9 to raise your hand, and we will be able to see that in the dashboard. I see that all the attendees that we have now are logged in through their computers, so that you should be able to actually click on the raise hand icon on your computer. And I see that Al would like to provide a public comment. So Al, I unmuted your line and you can speak now. Al, if you're talking, you may be muted on your side. We're not hearing anything on your side.
Do you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you.
I just want to say that this is similar to last year, which was okay with me. So I see no problem with this year, the proposals. That's it.
Okay. Thank you for that, Al.
Okay. Thanks, Al. I'm not seeing any other hands raised at this point. So if people want to provide any public comment. Okay. I see Bill wants to talk. Bill, go ahead. And Bill, I see that you are muted on your side as well, so just make sure to unmute your line. Here you go. Okay.
I follow Dave Hamilton on the Wainuchi. I asked that it be a one fish limit last year, and it was ignored, and it went to a two fish limit. I feel like Dave does, it should be a one fish limit on the Wainuchi.
Okay, thank you for that comment, Bill. We'll make sure and note that.
Okay. Do anyone else want to provide public comment? I'm not seeing any hands raised at this point, but let me know if you want to provide comments and make sure to click on that raise hand icon. Okay. I'm not seeing any other hands raised, so I'm not sure if we want to do a final call for raising hands at this point before we end the public comment. Just a few more seconds for people if they want to provide any final comments. Okay, then I think I'm going to turn it over to the panelists because I'm not seeing any other hands raised at this point. So I think we and in the public comment section.
Thank you, Dana. So we still got a little bit of time left here. If any of the advisors would like to get any parting words into us or any modeling suggestions or just general fishery comments, we can do that now.
This is Alan, can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you, Alan.
I think without the quinault schedule, I think we've done just about all we can do until we get their schedule.
Thanks, Alan. And like I said, we'll get that schedule once we get it. We'll put together another advisory group meeting and we'll get that out to you folks as soon as we get it. So thanks for that. Go ahead, Dave.
This is for Mike. If you recall, I had a couple suggestions, one about a fly fishing on the East Fork and one about a permanent solution so we don't lose either north or south side of the bay on restrictive years with runs. And I didn't receive much communication back from you on that. Would you be kind enough to either email me or call me tomorrow so we can discuss that? I realize your plate is full, but let's just say I'm a little uneasy with the manner of my suggestions were approached.
I hear you, Dave. I'll give you a ring tomorrow. Just want to point out, it's been said lots of times that we ignore people. Just want to point out that we don't ignore people, and just because suggestions are not used doesn't mean we ignore people. We put our best effort forward to listen to everybody, but not everything that is proposed can be done. So, yeah, for you, Dave, yes, those proposals are, we've got them. They're part of the record, and certainly we'll enjoy a conversation with you tomorrow.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Any of them want to check in with any of the other advisors? Bob, you got any final thoughts here?
No, I think Alan pretty well hit it on the head. Until we get a fishing schedule from Quinault, we're pretty well, our hands are tied.
Okay, thanks for that, Bob. Carrie, just kind of going down the list. Carrie, you got any final thoughts?
No, just eager to revisit this once we have the fishing schedule from the Quinault. I just want to urge everybody to make the right decisions here and have a conservative mind given the fisheries closures and kind of everything that's been happening even before the virus with the steelhead season and the fall salmon season. We need to make long-lasting decisions. And I know the policy dictates certain things, but that doesn't mean that we can't have an open mind and have some progressive thoughts going towards it. That's just my input.
Thank you for that, Carrie. Let's see, Francis. Yep, you're our judge.
And I'll just say, I really like this Zoom format. I think it's highly productive. Not that I don't like seeing you guys' faces, but.
Yeah. Nobody wants to see my face. Plus you can see that, yeah. There's Mike, in case everybody missed him. Everybody wave to Mike. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Mike. Maybe I'll come back even.
I haven't shaved for like 2 weeks, and John Clayton suit on the top, jammy pants on the bottom. So, excuse me. Mara, you have any final thoughts you want to add?
I actually found the discussion very productive this evening. I know I learned a lot, and that's really it.
Thank you for that, Maura. And Norm, I think you're the last one.
Well, you know, I just want to respond to, I can't remember your name, the guy that's sitting on the panel here. It's not a matter of being against conservation. It's a matter of how do you come up with a policy that prohibits people from going fishing and keeping the first fish or the first two fish they catch. To ask 10,000 anglers to subscribe to one philosophy, I personally don't see happening. When I'm out there fishing, I don't see it. There's a few people that do it, but let's come up with, if we want to keep an open mind, come up with policies or ideas on how to make it happen, other than just appealing to someone's a personal philosophy.
I hear you.
That's the challenge.
I can't think of a better place to suggest it than this forum. That's why I did it.
No, and I think, guys, everybody has the right to bring forth their ideas and suggestions, and this is a safe space, as it were, for us to have some tough conversations. And I think, we shouldn't be afraid to anyone to bring forth something that's going to inspire some discussion between us. Appreciate both your guys' thoughts on that. That's helpful to us as the agency to hear different perspectives, different viewpoints, and be able to weigh all those thoughts, ideas from the public in relation to our conservation and management objectives, and propose a fishery that provides opportunity while is also sustainable. So we can have these opportunities in the future. So appreciate everybody's thoughts on that. With that, it looks like we've burned through everything and a little bit ahead of time. I just want to take a second here to thank the folks, Kristen and Dana from Ross Strategic. Another great job facilitating us and helping us still reach our objectives in terms of having these public meetings in these challenging times. So really appreciate you folks. Thank you for helping us. And I know we didn't get as much done at this meeting as we'd like to get. We'd definitely, like to have a co-manager proposal. But we will be having those meetings coming up, and I'll keep you guys informed as much as I possibly can over the next week as we move through kind of the light at the end of the tunnel here week. As soon as we can, I will get another meeting scheduled, hopefully being able to utilize the Zoom platform again so we can have some more discussion and move forward. So thank you,
Chad. Yeah. Chad, this is Norm.
Yeah.
When do you leave for California? When do you leave for Vancouver?
This year, everything for PFMC is going to be done via webinar. So I'm going to be right here, stuck in my home office, pretending that I'm in Vancouver, but not really being in Vancouver. So, obviously, everything that we're going through is going to create some challenges. We're still trying to work through all the details about how we will communicate next week. One thing I will promise you is we will communicate in some manner. So I will definitely get stuff out to you guys.
A follow-up question, Chad. The state's doing a webinar. Is the whole PFMC doing a webinar?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, they are. And you can – that's a great question, Norm. Thanks for bringing that up. If you folks go to pcouncil.org, you can find information about that. I'll jot down a note here. If folks would, our board or need help going to sleep, I can send you the send everybody out the link so you can spend some time listening to the council if you'd like. So I'll make myself a note to send out that link to you folks to see how you can participate in those processes. So good question. Thanks, Norm.
Okay, and one last follow-up. In the past, when I've attended, we've had morning briefings, you know, in person. Are you anticipating, or Ron, I see that you were online, are you anticipating having a morning briefing via webinar?
Thanks, Norm. Yes. I think that the Washington delegation will have a webinar every morning at 7 o'clock like we normally do. So, and I think that's on the pcouncil.org website on the meetings. If you go in and check those, I think those are all being listed by the council staff. So hope to see you on there.
Okay, so we can click in and listen.
Yep.
Thank you.
You bet.
Okay, does anybody else have any final questions or anything they'd like to add before we kick off here? Okay, well, thanks everybody for joining and providing us. This was a really, really good conversation. One of our better meetings, I think, actually. So appreciate all the input. We'll take all that stuff back. And like I said, we'll reach out to you folks with information as we get it throughout the week. So thank you all.
Thanks everyone. Have a good evening. Chad.